Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and she could be reached at 631-862-1402. Tonight's guest is Dr. Janice Amatuzio, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. Or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And we are looking forward to our guest tonight. She's a medical doctor, but also a forensic pathologist and a coroner, a medical examiner. I'm not quite sure what all the difference between the terms. We'll ask her, but I guess those that watch CSI in those shows know more than we do.
Well, I think the key here is that she's trained in traditional medicine,
right,
but she's got an eye for the spiritual.
Right. You know, I didn't tell you this, but I had a call today from a client in the office, and he called to tell me that his father had passed away recently, and he needed to make some changes, and we started talking, and then I said, well, you know, was your dad, he had a long illness. I said, was he suffering at the end? And he said to me, oh, you know, it was terrible. He said, you know, my dad, you know, at the end was schizophrenic. And I said, what do you mean he was schizophrenic? Well, he was talking every day to my deceased mom. And you know, I let him go on for a while, and then I said, just hold it a second. I said, it's wrong to totally dismiss the possibility that he was talking to your mom. And, of course, I'm sure he hung up the phone eventually thinking that I'm nuts. But isn't it sad, you know, that not only a good deal of the medical profession, but even the loved ones of people that are passing are not, they've never heard of such a thing, you know. And, you know, we tend to think that everybody knows about deathbed visions and that these things happen.
Right, but that's what they tell them in the hospitals. That's exactly what they tell them in the hospitals. Even the hospitals where the nurses have been watching this go on year after year after year of their careers, and they write it off too. Oh, well, you know, you want to talk to the doctor about this, and then the doctor comes in and gives them the usual schizophrenic talk, and
yeah.
And that's the end of it. Let's move on because he's dying, so just, you know, bite the bullet and let it happen, rather than really getting into the moment and saying, wow, you're talking to mom. How about asking her this question, and how about asking her that? You've
right.
got a little medium thing set up there.
Well, and, you know, it's also, I mean, the whole family could have found comfort at the end, you know, by acknowledging, you know.
And many do, by the way.
Yeah.
Not everybody writes it off.
Right.
So
we put a little poll up on our website. I know that you found a way to put these polls up. I know I've seen them on a lot of different sites. So we put a one-question poll up, and it would be interesting to see the answers. I think the question that we asked was, what are your feelings about an afterlife? And the choices were, I hope there's an afterlife, I believe there's an afterlife, I know there's an afterlife, there is no afterlife, or I'm not sure. So I have my own preconceived notions of what's going to happen in the poll. I mean, do you have any opinions about what the most common answer is going to be?
Do I have an opinion of what the most common... Well, you got to remember, most of the people coming to our site are usually either they're already believers or they're seeking evidence of an afterlife.
Right.
So I think you're going to get a lot of I hope is going to be your biggest response.
Well, but using that line of reasoning, if they're already into a lot of these things, then wouldn't you think that they would say that I believe or I know?
I think you're going to get a lot of believers, but I think you're going to get more hopes, and I'll tell you why. Because we still live in a culture that tells us that talking to the dead is wrong. So if those people that believe that are still going to mediums or just even listening to what goes on with mediumship, they're doing it with a grain of salt, and they're saying, you know, there's a reason why my church says I'm not supposed to be doing this. So that immediately puts that question of doubt in there. Even though they may even have their own feelings and their own experiences, they could easily be writing that off too. Okay, so maybe I'm not. And our website gives them the confidence and the scientific backup to say, no, you're not nuts. So it depends on where they are in this search.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but we always like to think of it as a progression. You know, people move initially from hoping, you know, to believing, you know, and then eventually knowing. Now, I don't know whether it's possible to get to that knowing state without having personal experiences. You know, somebody like myself, you know, that just read everything in sight and kept looking for scientific confirmation, I guess for me it was a combination of those two things. But without personal experiences, I don't know whether I would have moved to that knowing level.
See, and you moved to the knowing level because of personal experiences. There are people who are born with this knowing, and they can't explain it, and they don't know where it comes from, and they haven't even yet maybe even had an experience. It's just something that they know.
Mm-hmm. I know you pulled out an article which caught my eye about a dog that was visiting the grave of his owner.
Yeah, this was reported about 2 weeks ago. It's a beautiful shepherd. His name is Captain, and he was adopted back in 2005 and lived with this gentleman named Guzman. And Guzman had passed away, and the dog left a few days after the funeral, and they had not seen the dog since. And as it turns out, the dog has been at the grave ever since the guy passed, which was in 2006, and sleeps every night on top of the grave. The grave workers, the graveyard workers, noticed the dog there, and so they started taking care of the dog, knowing that the dog must belong to this guy and wasn't going to leave anytime soon. So the dog is being cared for, but he's more caring for his owner, and he's not leaving his owner's side.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, so he permanently lives, I mean, his owner's house was not near the cemetery, right?
It was not that far that the dog couldn't wander off there. I mean, the dog did wander off there. And this, of course...
And he stays there 24/7?
Yeah, he doesn't leave.
Wow.
He walks around the cemetery, but at nighttime, he always goes back to the grave and lays down on top of the grave to go to sleep.
Hmm. What do you make of that?
I'm thinking that the dog has some physical attachment orientation to his owner, and he's not ready to cross over yet. We know from animal husbandry studies and from having our own animals that they have a born sense of when they know that they're going to die, when their days are numbered. And those animals usually like to run away from their homes and go out into the woods and just lay down and die. And if you check out ancient cultures, even the people of those cultures would do that. It's sort of offering their body back to nature. So the animals are offering their body back as food to anything else that survives.
Well, then it may not be a physical connection. It may be an ethereal connection, and he's connecting.
Yeah, but we know that the guy is not, that the soul doesn't stay at the grave.
No.
But maybe in this case it is. I mean, we don't know.
We don't know. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we are going to be joined by our wonderful guest, Dr. Janice Amatuzio. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Janice Amatuzio. Our sponsor is Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and she could be reached via phone at 631-862-1402. Bob?
And our guest tonight is Dr. Janice Amatuzio. She's a medical doctor, a forensic pathologist, and was known as the compassionate coroner. Now, as a forensic examiner, she spent her career looking for clues of how people died, in a sense, speaking for the dead. However, in the course of her work, she came upon many mysteries that she could not explain. She became aware of extraordinary stories from grieving family members, from patients that were near death, police officers, clergy, colleagues, and these were stories of the spiritual and otherworldly experiences concerning the transition between life and death. She is the author of two books, Forever Hours, and the last book is Beyond Knowing, Mysteries and Messages of Death and Life from a Forensic Pathologist. And her website is foreverhours.com. Welcome, Dr. Janice.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob.
It's wonderful to have you. You know, a good place to get started, and I mentioned some terms, forensic pathologist, medical examiner, coroner. For those of us that aren't big fans of CSI and this other shows, can you just explain the differences among those terms?
Oh, certainly. A forensic pathologist is a medical doctor who has done a specialty in the field of pathology, which is the study of disease, and then who's gone on and done an extra fellowship year in forensic pathology, which is really the study of sudden, unusual, unexpected death. And the forensic pathologist's job really consists of speaking for the dead. Now, a forensic pathologist can be appointed by a county board as medical examiner. And that is more of a political position, whereas the term forensic pathology is a specialty. So most forensic pathologists do end up working in the public realm. You know, forensic comes from the Greek word forum, which means public. But actually, I can't think of any job that's more intimate than the work a forensic pathologist does. You know, as a forensic pathologist, you examine people's lives at the moment of their death. You have the opportunity to walk in their shoes, so to speak, to look at their homes, their refrigerators and wastebaskets, to look under their fingernails, to undress them, and to even sometimes do a post-mortem exam or autopsy. What happened with me was that I originally had started off in internal medicine, and I loved talking to people. When I got into forensics, I missed that patient contact. So I began calling family members on after the deaths of people who didn't die from a homicide or a suspicious death, those who had died perhaps at home or on their boat or while driving a car, and letting the family members know what I had found. After all, it appeared to me that surgeons came out of the operating room and would talk to family members, and I felt a forensic pathologist should do the same when it didn't interfere with a law enforcement investigation. When I started doing that, I almost quit because it was so darn traumatic. I wasn't expecting all that grief.
I could imagine. So here you are. You're trained scientist, so to speak, because you have mainstream medical training. I know your father was also a well-respected physician. So, in your early years of your medical career, did you ever contemplate such things as the possibility that we might survive death?
Well, you know, I was brought up a staunch Catholic by my Irish mother and my Italian father, so you know there was nothing else to be but a staunch Catholic in our house. And of course, religion had always taught me that. But you know, when I first saw death and first experienced it, when I would go with my dad when I was a little girl, I was pretty blown away by it. Nothing had really prepared me for the reality. But you know, as time has gone on, and I think as I have matured, my faith has been strengthened by the experiences that really stunned me, amazed me, and had the ring of truth to them, particularly because family members would tell me that these experiences, having a vision or a dream of their loved one shortly after their death, that these would give them such incredible peace. They would say, I'm different now. I can go on. And for me, these experiences really strengthened my own inner knowing. And I guess that's the path all of us ultimately have to take. You know, we're all taught, but we have to make those decisions ourselves.
So I guess that, as you mentioned, in the scope of your job, you were an investigator of sorts, and I know you took copious notes. You had to as you reconstructed the cases. So did you just reach a point where you started reviewing your notes and you started looking at all these different reports that were given to you about non-physical experiences when you step back and said, well, maybe there really is something to this?
You know, there was always that deep ring of truth. There was that awareness, and there was such extreme joy in my heart when I would hear one of these things, when I would hear somebody say, my husband appeared to me last night, and I might have done that husband's autopsy, and that he just glowed with light, and that he told me that he would always be with me, and that just my thought would cause him to rush to my side. And then I began to think, perhaps all of us are beings of light in some way. And I began to comb through my Bible studies from when I was young, when I was a little girl. And I think I just matured. And I began to realize, as I studied what the scientists today are realizing, is that human beings are actually composed of light. And as such, we begin to realize that medicine, when it treats only the body, is missing the other important aspects, the mind and the spirit, or soul, or energy. And I think when you begin to look at human beings as three parts, you know, made in the image of God, you begin to see how it all comes together. And I think for me, it took the tincture of time, and it took a critical amount of experience before it began to fall into place. I've always had faith that, in those words, you know, seek and knock and the door will be opened. You know, seek and you will find the answer. And I think as I learned to investigate death in order to tell the truth about what had happened, I begin to realize that if we are truly beings of light, that we are more than flesh and bone, that we are multi-dimensional energy systems, and that knowledge just made me realize there was nothing to fear.
Yeah, it is. I guess very. You're in such a unique position, having the perspective of being a medical examiner and somebody that believes that death is not final. I mean, it's what a juxtaposition that is.
You know, when I picked out this life, who would have thought that I would become a forensic pathologist? And I would say to my audiences, you know, the largest part of us doesn't really die.
Right.
But, you know, when you listen to people, for example, a woman, let me tell you this story.
Okay.
This is a man who survived a cardiac arrest. And I was speaking to a group of people, the cardiac arrest survivors, and this incredible man came up to me afterwards and said, "Doc, how did you know? You got it right." And I said to him, "What do you know? Please tell me." This man had had a heart attack, cardiac arrest, while he was on an airplane. And he began to feel all this chest tightness. He collapsed forward in the aisle. He collapsed onto the floor. And he said in that moment, he found himself outside of his body, looking down. And he said, "I was almost detached from my body. I had no more pain in my chest. I felt relief, and I moved just with the power of my thoughts." And he said, "I saw this man come up from the back of the plane, and he happened to be a paramedic from the Abbott Northwestern system here in Minneapolis. And he said to the stewardess, 'Let me take over. I know how to run a cardiac arrest.' It took 8 minutes to get him back to a rhythm that was actually perfusing. But at that time, when he came back, he knew something extraordinary had happened. He said, "As I watched the cardiac arrest from up somewhere near the top of the plane," he said, "I could feel the prayers and I could feel the thoughts of everybody in that plane. And then," he said, "when I could do nothing with my body, I left, and I found myself in such an extraordinary place of light and extreme joy." He said, "I saw the importance of caring for my body, and I saw that our bodies are amazing physical gifts which focus our energy on Earth." He said, I can't even describe the joy I experienced." He said, I said, "Doc, I was in the presence of God, and God is so much bigger than you and I could imagine." He said, when you die, you leave all the man-made stuff behind. He said, you drop all your differences like shedding your clothes. And then he said, I remember being in the presence of another being so infinitely kind and compassionate. And together, he said, I watched and we reviewed my lifetime. He said, it was like watching a ribbon of light unwinding. He said, I saw that everything that had happened in my, I saw everything that had happened in my whole life. He said, there was no reprisal, just a sense of amazement, he said, when I realized that everything, even the things I had thought were disasters, were just perfect, because they led me to where he was today. He said, when we finished, he said, it was as though we turned around and looked forward, and he said, I saw all of my life, all the events that would come on Earth. He said, I realized I had a mission, a purpose. And he said, that's why I came back. And he said, furthermore, he said, I was told that I would not remember the future events that would unfold. And he said, I remember thinking, that's okay. But when I questioned it one more time in my mind, he said, the being said to me with such compassion, trust yourself, you'll know. It's been experiences like that that have made me begin to understand that, you know, we forensic pathologists try to make positive identifications, you know, so we can notify the next of kin and dispose of property. But, you know, I think in forensics and when we put forensics together with what the mystics have said, you know, throughout the ages, we begin to realize that our positive identification is actually more than the body. It's the energy of our spirit, it's our mind, and our body.
And you have many such accounts in both your books, but there's several in Beyond Knowing. One, you know, and I must have... just when you think you've read about all the experiences, you had one that really hit home with me. There was a dying boy, and he told his mother to hold him, and the reason she had to hold him because he kept saying he needed more gravity. Mm-hmm. You know, he was going up, and I said, boy, you know, how wonderful. That sort of fits in with the concept of the physical world being being more dense than the spiritual realm, you know, doesn't it? Where I never heard that before, but that must have been very meaningful to you.
Well, you know, let me just go venture into the world of quantum physics for just a moment. Albert Einstein, of course, said that energy, the energy of light, E equals mc squared. The energy equals mass times the velocity of light squared. And his equation basically did a very important thing. He said that energy and matter are the same thing. One's just at a different vibration, a different energy level. And physicists would probably think I'm going to scramble this terribly, but if you begin to think of our bodies as denser light, but still a body being matter that is enveloped by the energy of our spirit or soul, and the mind being the way that we can communicate between the soul and the body, we begin to realize that when we think, when we focus energy by our thoughts, it has actual effects. You know, all masters have said, fear not. And I begin to think that as we learn more, as we ponder these mysteries, we begin to realize that we actually are beings of light which have the privilege of having a lifetime, a physical body, and that our physical bodies are actually energy systems, and that, you know, we are created in the image and likeness of our own creator. It begins to see how absolutely astonishing a lifetime is. I've had people tell me, even a man who survived his own suicide attempt, he said, listen here, he said, a lifetime is a phenomenal gift. use it well. And he had, when he was being resuscitated from his own suicide attempt, he had the opportunity to rise above his body and to see his mother and his father who had been deceased, and to see the way he had shaped his lifetime and how his thoughts had caused so much despair. He came back and he said, you know, he said, love is the most important organizing force in the universe. He said, love yourself. He said, that's what I learned. I had to love myself.
And certainly, you know, love might be that energy bond that ties us to our loved ones in other realms. You know, it manifests in a physical connection. One thing that you wrote in the book, you mentioned your investigations taught you the value of making observations versus judgments. And that's very wise. I think this also can be applied to our understanding of a lot of these phenomena. Don't we tend to judge the experiences we have based upon our preconceived notions or education?
Absolutely. You know, my father used to say that his mother, his Italian mother, would say, leave the door open. You never know what the wind will blow in. And I think... And Neil Walsh has written that humility is so important. He'd say, there's something we don't know, the knowing of which would change everything. And, you know, the path of every true human being is to make their own assessments. But I would say what I have taught my death investigators is stay open. You know, just make observations. When you observe something, you leave the door open. When you make a judgment, bang, you close the door down. And there may just be one more thing which would make a little bit more difference. I think today, as we look around and we're so used to having answers so quickly, we have to remember where we've come from on Earth, that we're made of the same stuff, the carbon and oxygen and nitrogen that the plants and the trees and the grasses and the foodstuffs we eat and all around us. And you can't force a flower to bloom before it's time. And I think when we begin to just search and go within, quiet down, we develop that insight. People have said to me, and my investigators will say, well, Doc, what really is insight? I said, you know, that's what happens when you stop thinking. When you're in the shower, maybe whistling away, and all of a sudden you go, oh, that's it. That's how I solved that problem. I think sometimes we have to just trust that we will solve the problem. We will figure out what happened. And most people know when they have discovered something that's true. Patience is what we need.
And I know you had a lot of good mentors. One of your mentors told you, you know, that your work is 50% of your work was about what you know, and the other 50% was what you feel. And I think that you realize that some of your colleagues might practice better medicine if maybe they trusted what they felt or their intuition just a little bit more.
Well, you know, you bring up such a good point. I think that it takes a lot of courage to trust your intuition or to trust yourself. I think some of us don't begin to trust until we've been, you know, at our jobs or out in practice for a long time. But that intuition, I think, is probably our ability to sense energy. And I think that's something that our elders and maybe the ancient ones knew how to do. You know, I think that trusting your intuition is what happens sometimes when we're in a group, like the soldiers who come back from war. And in particular, in my generation, it was the Vietnam War. And they would tell me, my friends would tell me, you know, when we were in danger, the whole group could begin to sense the danger. We were on heightened alert because we were so connected. And then police officers will frequently say, I'm walking down the beat or I'm driving down an area that I've driven down many times before and something's different. And they turn the corner and there is something there. But look, I think that most people, you know, when you walk into a room and two people are talking, you know if they're talking about you. I mean,
right.
You know it. And I think perhaps what we need to do, and I know that the best way to teach is to lead by example, is for us to remember to quiet down and to become aware of our own energy and to realize that our mind, which operates really at a quantum level, can sense the energy, the field of energy around us. And those are our perceptions. And our perceptions are actually transferred to our body because the mind is in every cell of the body. Now, I realize I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I think that takes us back to the importance of realizing that we are part energy and that intuition, well, that's, you know, that's the energy of the soul, just like our feelings.
And we are talking with Dr. Janice Amatuzio. Her book is called Beyond Knowing, Mysteries and Messages of Death and Life from a Forensic Pathologist. The website is foreverhours.com. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we will hear much more from Dr. Amatuzio. So stay with us.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one.
Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Janice Amatuzio. This show is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and she could be reached by phone at 631-862-1402. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who've made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income that they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for, and there are more than 900 online stores, like Expedia, Fandango, Nike, Petco, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel with free shuttle service to and from the airport as well as to local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Make your arrangements and reservations now as the hotel block closes on October 8th. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of esteemed scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Morton, who will be joining our panel of expert presenters. Dr. Evan Alexander III, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. On 12-12-12, don't miss being in the right place on the most spiritual date of the year. 12-12-12 is a medium marathon featuring an evening of four extraordinary mediums. Bobby Allison, Kim Russo, Siri Bernstein, and Laura Lynn Jackson will be at Long Island University CW Post Campus in Brookville, New York. Seats may be reserved via our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org on the events page. Holidays Pass this year is in four locations: Natick, Massachusetts with medium Joanne Gerber, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey with medium Janet Nohavik, Bethel, Connecticut with Angelina Diana, and Melville, New York with star of Emmy-nominated TV show The Afterlife, medium Suzanne Northrup. Please visit the Forever Family Foundation website for dates. So they are all on Saturday nights in December and to make your reservations. Back to you, Bob.
And we are back with Dr. Janice Amatuzio, the author of Beyond Knowing, and her website is foreverhours.com. Dr. Amatuzio, thanks for staying with us. You know, we, in our earlier discussion, you told us about an extraordinary near-death experience that had a lot of the classic parts to it, you know, an all-encompassing light, out of going out of body, you know, a life review. There's another extraordinary case in Beyond Knowing where you had a patient that underwent a kidney and pancreas transplant and had an experience where he went out of body and visited his organ donor. And then I think that even when he awakened from surgery, he mentioned the donor's actual name. What was your reaction when you heard this? Well, are you with us, Dr. Amatuzio? I guess we lost Dr. Amatuzio.
BBSRadio.com.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
And we're back with Dr. Janice Amatuzio. I was mentioning before the break, we had one of the extraordinary cases in your book was a patient who actually underwent a kidney and pancreas transplant, then had an NDE, went out of body and visited his organ donor, which was quite extraordinary. I think when he woke from surgery, he even mentioned the donor's actual name. How did you react to this? What was your reaction when you realized what went on?
My goodness, when I heard that experience, I was astonished, and it really affirmed things for me. When this man awakened, the first words he said to his wife were, "My donor's name is Danny." And his wife was a little bit puzzled. She mentioned it to her sister, and they had been sitting, and this was before HIPAA, the Health Information Patient Privacy Act.
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, my, there was a man who was named Danny. His name was erased." And that particular story, since I actually spoke to the man who received the pancreas and the kidney transplant, I think his words said it best. He said, "Danny gave me more than life." He said, he gave me hope. And he gave me knowing that in some way all was well. And he told me that so many people discounted his story and couldn't possibly believe that it happened to him. I said, "How did that make you feel?" And he said, "It doesn't matter. Nobody needs to know this but me. It has changed my life."
Yeah, that's certainly... not only is a life-changing experience for him as the experiencer, but for those around him, his family, his friends, maybe even his doctor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think people are beginning to realize that these experiences are gifts, like moments of grace, times when we can transcend our ordinary perceptions and begin to see ourselves as who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, once we know that, we begin to understand who we are and what the real secrets to a good, strong life really are. And that is that we pay attention to the power of our minds. We remember to incorporate compassion for ourselves and for others. We remember the golden rule. And if we would all begin to do that, I think together we'd remember the real meaning of that word, mankind, and it may help us. But each lifetime is a phenomenal gift, and I think that these near-death experiences, the magic of these is really the real connection. We get to reconnect with our loved one. We discover we're not alone, and we discover that our bodies are not just exactly who we are. And I would say to any of our listeners tonight that if they are grieving for someone, they have to understand that our loved one can be with us just with the power of our thought, that death is not the end of a life. As Eckhart Tolle says, life has no equal. Death is the opposite of birth. And I think if we begin to let our loved ones who have passed be free and to go on, we will be more like that wonderful quote from the movie Gladiator. This was my husband's DVD. I used it to exercise. But in the movie, he said, "What you do in life echoes in eternity." And when he talked about his family, he said, "I will see you again, but not yet."
Well, you had so many experiences and firsthand accounts. You're convinced that from the things you witnessed, that if someone believes in an afterlife, if they believe that they're going to see their loved one again, I mean, it has a positive effect in the way that they grieve.
Absolutely. I think that all of us have to give ourselves that, you know, very natural period of grief. But then I think we have to make a choice. We can stay in that place of such utter devastation, or we can begin to think a little differently. We can move to a slightly larger awareness that life is bigger than we can imagine, that there's a grander truth. And I think as we begin to celebrate the gift of our loved one and say to them or to ourselves, "I can go on and I will be fine because of the gift of your love," then we begin to remember that each of us have a purpose and that each lifetime is a gift, and that in the end we all go home and there's nothing to fear. I think that helps temper and comfort our grief more than anything else I can think of.
Absolutely. When you speak to, I know you do some speaking now to medical professionals, and when you do that, I mean, do you hope to open their minds in some way to consider some of the things that we're talking about?
You know, those medical professionals are some of the greatest skeptics I've ever encountered.
Yeah.
but, you know, times are changing, and sometimes they begin to see this as well. I think as we begin to appeal to the physicians and the scientists and talk about humility, you know, there's something we don't know, the knowing of which would change everything, as Neil Walsh says. I think we teach them that we have to leave the door open. And, you know, I've read that you teach that which you need most to learn, and the best way to teach another is to lead by example. And I can tell you, as a forensic pathologist, to begin to talk about life after death, well, you could either laugh me right off the stage, or you can say, Maybe there's something to it.
Yeah. Well, you certainly stuck with your guns, so to speak. I mean, you were a female carno when there weren't any. I'm sure you encountered a great deal of prejudice there. You started, and then as if that wasn't hard enough, you started to collect all these accounts, and some of your colleagues became aware of that. And you just went from there. Although I was surprised that you mentioned in the book that you weren't really shunned. I mean, your work was accepted, and I'm talking about the work of collecting all of these personal experiences. I mean, you didn't find much opposition from your medical colleagues.
Well, not to my face.
Yeah. Okay.
Not to my face. I have heard that some think I'm a little different or a little strange or wonder what path I've taken. But I continued to do my mainstream work until now, and now I'm free to actually read a little more and explore and think about it. But I think that if you, and I've always felt that you present this as here's what I've heard. And not say, this is what is true. You just say, here it is, and if it speaks to you, there, you have it. And if it doesn't, that's okay. There's really no need for anyone to force one's ideas on another. And I think that's the way that I have felt, that this is gentle, it's intimate. It's so deeply, deeply personal. And those who are seeking a larger truth will find it. And I think that's the best way to be.
Yeah, well, we certainly resonate with your work. I mean, we believe that it's important for people to talk about these experiences, because once it gets out in the open and more people learn, it tends to open their minds to other possibilities. We have been talking with Dr. Janice Amatuzio. She is the author of Forever Hours and Beyond Knowing, Mysteries and Messages of Death and Life from a Forensic Pathologist. I know that she's working on another book, and we anxiously await that. Her website is foreverhours.com. And thank you so much for being on the show, and we truly hope that you'll join us again.
Thank you for having me. Truly enjoyed it.
Thanks. Take care. Good night.
We now ask our listeners to join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy for more participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Barbara Petillo, David Hates, Rita Springer, CJ, Eileen LaFada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Nancy Shield, Barbara Russell, Diane Archangel, Paul Smith, and Kate Torpy. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Matsuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.